Yaakov Avinu, on his way out of Eretz Yisrael, Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Sheva Vayelech Harana, he has that famous dream on Mount Moriah, the dream of the angels ascending and descending the ladder. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises him that he will be with him, he will return him to the land, and he will give him Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov Avinu wakes up and he says, Mana Rama Komasa, how awesome is this place? Ein zekim beit Elokim v'zeh shar shemayim. This is the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. He takes a stone that was under his head. He makes it as a monument, pours oil on its top. And then here in the key pasuk in source number 1, verse number 19, and he named the place Beit El. However, Ulam, Luz Shema Ir L'Rishana. However, Luz was the city's name originally. And he makes a promise. Hashem gives him what he needs, basic necessities of bread to eat, clothes to wear, and he comes back to Eretz Yisrael, he'll give a tithe, he'll give a miser, and this place will be the house of God. And this was Sils and Nevi'im asked the obvious question, Sarich Leva'er, Mayin Yana Katuv Lo Dienu, Echa Yashem Ayabarishana. Why is it necessary to know what the name was before he renames it? Yaakov Avinu names his place Beit El, the house of God. Why was it necessary to know that the previous name of the city was Luz? What's the significance of that? Question 2. Rashi notes, based on the Gemara in Pesachim, that Yaakov Avinu naming this city Beit El is really naming the mountain of God, the house, as a reference to the house. And each one of the Avos named this place something different. Avraham Avinu named it a mountain, as it says, Bahar Hashem Yira'eh. Yitzhak Avinu Vayetze Yitzhak Lasuch Basadeh referred to it as a field. Yaakov Avinu, however, refers to it as a house. And the Pasuk in Yeshaya Perek Beis describes that in the future, the Vahu Amin Rabim, the nations will come and say, let us go up to the house, to Lelokei Beis Yaakov. Okay, Yaakov. Let's go to the house of the God of Yaakov, that it's not referred to in the future as the field or as a mountain, but rather as a house. What is the significance that in the future, the way this place is referred to as a bayis, as a home? It's as if a Kadosh Baruch Hu chooses of the three, mountain, field, and house, he chooses the option of house. What's the significance of that? Before we begin our study of Mirtz Hashem on three levels, let's just do a little bit of background information. When we think of the name Luz, the name of the city was Luz before it was changed to Beit El. What do we know about Luz? I think two things come to our mind. One is we're all familiar with that famous city called Luz. We'll talk about it later in the Shir Mirtz Hashem, which the Malach HaMavet, the angel of death, did not have any right to enter into that city. The other connection we have with Luz is the bone that is fed on Balava Malka. Let's take a look at this latter idea a little bit more in depth, because it will serve as background information for both the first and second levels of Mirtz Hashem. Rav Baruch left in his Sefer Shabbos in My Soul, has a number of chapters on Malava Malka, and he notes, the Kaf HaChaim writes that one should not remove his Shabbos clothes until he's eaten Malava Malka. He also rules that the Shabbos version of benching is recited Shermalos, Migdol. The Shari Tshuva quotes the Arizal saying that the Neshama Yisera does not leave us until after Malava Malka. That's why it's preferable to avoid doing any work until eating the additional meal. Malava Malka is closely related with Mashiach. Rav Tzadok HaGaon explains that the three meals on Shabbos reflect the three avos. The fourth of the Merkava, the fourth part of the chariot, is David HaMelech, it's the Suda of Malava Malka. The Torah mentions the custom to mention Eliyahu HaNavi, Amotzei Shabbos. With this in mind, in Source 5, it comes of no surprise that we find Kabbalistic sources informing us that the food we eat at Malava Malka will sustain us at the time of the resurrection of the dead. The Kaf HaChaim cites the idea that this bone, called either Luz or Naskoi, derives nourishment from no other food except the Malava Malka. This bone was the only part of the body that did not benefit from the sinful act of eating the forbidden fruit of the Eitz Hadaat. It remained pure and unaffected by the physical lusts and temptations that entered into us with the eating of the fruit of the forbidden tree. As the Nefesh HaChaim explains before, I don't have a sin, the Yetzer was external to a person. We clearly understood the difference between good and evil. We're not driven to rationalize our misguided behavior. After the sin, the Yetzer Hara entered into us, and truth and clarity were clouded by lusts and desires, urging us to engage in forbidden behavior. We became people driven by a mixture of good and bad, tov and ra. The entire world, even the food we ate, contains this combination of tov and ra within. Therefore, Tzaddik writes that if the loose bone remained pure and unsullied by the effects of Eitz Hadaat and the Eitz Hara, the regular food that we have with this mixture of tov and ra cannot nourish it. It can only be nourished by the food of Malav HaMalka. The reason is simple, he continues in 6. It's because when we eat Malav HaMalka, we're not eating because we're hungry. We just went through 3 meals on Shabbos. We're eating it L'shem Mitzvah, because it's a mitzvah. And indeed we know, just to add, that the Malav HaMalka meal, some people are careful to eat it, as we saw, right after Shabbos. Some families just go straight into Abdullah, right into Malav HaMalka, to show the children the importance of Malav HaMalka. You should have a white tablecloth spread. Some people light candles. Songs are sung. One should have a hot food or a hot drink. People are careful to eat fish, meat, different customs. Some people are careful. There's an Indian of actually washing from Malav HaMalka to sit and down and have a suda. Some people have leftover bread from Shabbos, the Shirayim. We'll talk about that more, that to bring Shabbos into the week. And the meal should be something, the Sfarim write, that should be prepared after Shabbos, special for Malav HaMalka, and that this is a very special and holy meal. Indeed, we know there was skula of eating Malav HaMalka. I'm sure many of us have heard this. It's that it's a skula for women who should have an easy labor. And now it makes sense where the skula comes from. If the whole idea of the luz bone is fed on Malav HaMalka, and the luz was not nourished on Friday, it only eats from the food of Malav HaMalka, so it wasn't nourished by the effects of the sin of eating of the Eitz Hadaat. So therefore, it has this potential to offset that sin, the consequences of that sin, which is difficulty in childbirth, right? Betsy tell debunim. And therefore, by eating Malav HaMalka, you're building up the strength of that loose bone, you're building up the strength to counter the curse. And hence it has many, not only for that, has many schools against depression and against it's also a schut to have parnasa, to have eating Malav HaMalka enables a person to have wealth during the week, which is again offsets the rishon sin, and all of it fits into one beautiful picture. Now, if we continue in 6, Kabbalistic Sfarim write that the loose bone is the source and root of the person. At death, it does not disintegrate and it cannot get destroyed. If you put it in a fire, it does not burn. If you try to smash it with a hammer, it does not become ground up. The loose of the bone from which the entire body will be reconstructed after it's nourished by the dew of Tchias HaMetim that Hashem will shower down. Rav Tzaddik and Rav Dessler explain that the loose bone indestructibility is not meant in the physical sense. Tragically, we know that millions of Jews throughout history have been totally and completely cremated. The loose bone's ruthless survival is meant on a spiritual level. It symbolizes the essence of the person, the Nekudas HaEmes, which never truly dies. This is the aspect of us that will make Tchias HaMetim feel like we're waking up from a long nap rather than a complete rebirth, since the loose bone was never destroyed. So with this idea in mind, that the loose bone is nourished by the food of Otzei Shabbos, it wasn't sullied or affected by the sin of the Eitz Hadaat, the sin of the golden calf, it's nourished only by the food of Malav HaMalka, the food that we eat, L'shem Shamayim, for the sake of heaven. We can now begin to appreciate on 3 levels our Pasuk. Yaakov Avinu named this place Beit El. Indeed, this is the name that Hashem uses for Beit Elokei Yaakov, the house of the God of Yaakov. And the Torah still is clear to say that the name of this place before Beit El is Luz. And we need to understand why. Level number 1. Rav Pinchas Friedman in Parshas Toldos, Tavshin Ayin Beis, has 2 beautiful essays, both in Parshas Toldos and Vayetze, on the loose bone. I'd like to just take a look at a couple of insights from the beginning of the Parshas Toldos essay. There's a lot more in Toldos and a whole Indian in Vayetze we're not even touching to show you the depth of what this loose bone is all about. And he notes the following. On the Pasuk that Yitzhak Avinu was 40 years old, beginning of Toldos, when he took Rivka, the daughter of Besuel, the Aramean from Paddan Aram, the sister of Lavan, to be his wife. So he notes that we can look at Pardes, four major levels of understanding a pasuk: Pshat, Remes, Drash, and Sod. On the Sod level, the Zohar HaKadosh writes that this pasuk is an allusion to the time of the future redemption. 40 years after the redemption, Yisrael will merit resurrection of the dead. The neshama will return to re-enter the body and bring it back to life. So Yitzhak Avinu, being 40 years old, represents the 40 years after the redemption that will have Tchias HaMeitim. According to the Zohar, continuing in the bracket in 7, Yitzhak alludes to the neshama that will return and re-enter the body. Rivka alludes to the physical body that will be resurrected. Bat Bituel Harami is an allusion to the fact that the physical body will rise and be revitalized in the merit of the single bone that does not decay in the grave and remains intact. This bone is referred to as Besuel Harami. The body is destined to be rebuilt from this particular bone at the time of the resurrection. Therefore, the body is referred to as the daughter, Rivka, the daughter of Besuel Harami. Now, how do we understand this? This loose bone is referred to as Besuel Harami. Besuel, the one who cheats, makes absolutely no sense. The Zohar continues and explains. Rav Huna states, this is an 8, that he was in a city by the sea and heard them referring to the bone in the spinal column remains in the grave after the rest of the body is gone as Besuel the fraud. After inquiring, he was told that this bone has the shape of a snake's head. Just as a snake is deceptive and fraudulent, this bone is the most fraudulent bone in the body. As Rav Shimon taught, this bone remains in existence long after the other bones, because it deceptively does not partake from human consumption as the other bones do. As a consequence, it remains strong and is the essential building block for the resurrection of the body. Then Rav Shimon taught us that it is a fraud, and was always a fraud, and was a neighbor of the deceptive and fraudulent Yetzirah. Now, obviously, this makes absolutely no sense at first value, maybe even at second and third value. Besuel Harami, the loose bone, this bone that we spoke about, this indestructible bone that is eaten and gains nourishment on Motzei Shabbos, is a fraud? It's a neighbor of a fraud? What is going on here? So we need to be able to try to understand this a little bit deeper. He quotes here, and this is source 10, from the Siddur of the great Yavetz, Rav Yaakov Emden. And this piece of the Yavetz is quoted in many of the Sfarim, perhaps one of those classic pieces, Amalava Malka. And he says the following. During the process of creation, this is a synopsis of the Yavetz, Hashem created man's physical form, his body, as it's written, and Hashem, God, formed the man of soil from the earth, and blew into his nostrils the soul of life, and man became a living soul. In truth, after the sin involving the tree of knowledge, the reality of death was decreed and imposed upon all living creatures. Nevertheless, since man does not utilize his physical body to perform mitzvot and good deeds, it's Hashem's will to resurrect that very same body rather than to create an entirely new body. We understand this. Like, if we take a look right at this moment, we're either using our eyes to read, our ears to hear, or perhaps share this year or aspects of it, whatever we can follow, with others. And we'll act upon it. We'll be more careful about eating Malava Malka. We are doing all of this with our body. We're accomplishing so many mitzvot. So Hashem doesn't want to start from scratch. He wants to take this body that we've been using for so many mitzvot and be able to take that again after it's been processed. And that's the separation of the body and soul to its fullest ability before they get reunited in Tchias HaMeitim. For this reason, going back to the Yavetz and the Arrow intent, Hashem prepared the remedy prior to the malady by creating a unique entity within the physical body, the loose bone. It stands apart from all the other physical parts and structures of the body, and that's composed of unique material not made up of the four elements. It does not derive benefit from any food substance, so its existence will not depend on any physical nourishment or sustenance. Consequently, it exists for all eternity, does not decay, cannot be consumed by fire. It will serve as a building block for which Hashem will build the body anew at the time of Tchias HaMeitim, resurrection of the dead. In this manner, the Yavetz explains why the Zohar HaKadosh refers to the bone as Besuel HaRami, Besuel the fraud. giving two reasons. One, it fools the body into thinking it's being nourished physically along with the rest of the body, while in reality it does not derive any physical benefit from its food and drink. And two, it deceptively appears to die along with the rest of the body, while in reality it continues to live and exist long after the person has died. And we see this in a numerical illusion. Besuel, numerical value, is 439. Met, dead, is 440. Besuel is one less. There's some aspect. This gematria alludes to the fact that this bone only appears to die, but in reality continues to live on completely intact. This is why this bone only derives benefit from the Malava Malka meal on Shabbos. Well, it's a Shabbos, as we've said. It's only eaten L'shem Mitzvah, not for any particular benefit. And he goes on, the Shulah Pinchas, that explains to us the primordial servant, who's the Yetara, who's also the Malach HaMavis, I'll keep that in mind, in the city of Luz, as we get to, had one goal in mind. He wished to impose a death decree on Adam and Chava and all their future descendants. He figured that if they ate from the tree of knowledge, and all of their body, limbs, benefited from the forbidden fruit, they would never be resurrected. Hashem, however, thwarted his plans by introducing the remedy prior to the illness, by creating the loose bone from which man would ultimately be resurrected. The loose was certainly well aware that the serpent knew that it did not participate in eating from the tree of knowledge, and would assault it with all of its negative and impure forces in order to corrupt it with heresy, which is in fact what happened with the Dora Mabul, that were completely wiped out. Therefore, when the Luz witnessed the deceit and lies of the serpent, it decided to follow the guidelines of the Pasuk. With a devout, you act devoutly. With a wholehearted man, you act wholeheartedly. With a trustworthy, you act trustingly. And with the crooked, you act perversely. Just as the serpent acted cunningly and dishonestly with Adam and Chava, so too the loose bone acted cunningly and dishonestly with the serpent. It pretended as if it partook from the tree of knowledge, and it fooled the serpent into believing that it died along with the rest of the body. Alas, we can truly appreciate the praise the Torah attributes to the loose bone by referring to it. It's Besul HaRami, which Zohar interprets as Besul the fraud. For the loose adopted the ways of the serpent, deceiving the serpent into thinking it also partook and benefit from the tree of knowledge. In other words, he acted as a neighbor and colleague of the Yetzer Hara, learning from it to act deceitfully in keeping with the tenet, with the crooked, you act perversely. So in a nutshell, what we've seen, that the Luz, this whole aspect of the Luz, is in order to be able to be the refuah before the Makkah, in order to be able to be the cornerstone from which a person is going to be rebuilt in the future, Trias HaMetim, it had to pretend to die along with the rest of the body. It has to pretend that it enjoyed from the fruit of the Eitz HaDaat like everything else. It was doing so just to protect itself, that it would be able to remain unsullied and pure, and to be able to be that part which is nourished at the spiritual meal of Malava Malka, how important Malava Malka is, in order to be able to then have the ability to be a tremendous protection for us already now, to counter the consequences of the sin of and the punishment of the Eitz HaDaat, and to be the cornerstone of the rebuilding. What does this have to do with our Pasuk? So I think we have to understand on a personal level of Yaakov Avinu at this moment, where he is and where he's headed. Rav Moshe Breslover in Sefer L'Machar Tir notes that if you take a look at Parsha Vayetze, you will find that there's one major theme that runs through the Parsha. And that theme is a theme of stones. You find in the beginning, the middle, and the end. What is a stone about? So in the beginning of the parasha, we have Yaakov Avinu putting the stones by his head, and then he takes a stone and makes it a matzeva, an altar, and places oil on top. Then we have Yaakov Avinu going into Haran itself and seeing a stone on the well and taking it off to be able to feed Lavan's sheep when he sees Rachel Imenu. And ultimately, at the end of the parasha, Yaakov Avinu makes a gal'ed, makes a partition wall between him and Lavan that no one should pass over the other side, and this was like their peace deal as they part from each other. What's the significance of all of these stones, not leaving a stone unturned? So we know in Source 15, he quotes the pasuk from Parshas Vayechi, Misham ro'eh Evan Yisrael. What is an Evan Yisrael? So Rashi says, Evan is no trikon, av ubet. Evan is spelled aleph bet nun. You could take the bet and connect it to the aleph, and you could take the bet and connect it to the nun. Av, father, ben, son, and Evan is a building block, a ben, binyan, it's to build. The whole idea of children is a building block, which is a continuity of the family. When we have stones being the center of our parsha, it's because Parsha Vayetze is the binyan, it's the building of the Bnei Yaakov, the children of Yaakov. All three parts, notes from Breslover in this essay, reflect different parts of building a whole. Part number one is Vayasei Mirashotav, which is Mitachad Mocho V'Sarfei Hagigav. Before you're able to build a home, you have to envision what this home is going to be like. How you want your home to be, right? Discussions on a date. How do you want to raise your children? How do you want to spend your free time? All of these things are this vision. That's the symbolism of placing the stone under his head. The actual building is represented by the taking off the stone off the well. Pasuk Mishlei describes women as referring to a well. This idea of fertility, of vibrancy, taking the stone off the well is the ability to actually have the children, which is the second part of the parsha. So the first is envisioning, and the second is actually building this home. What's fascinating to notice, that when Yaakov Avinu has to build this home, and ultimately has to provide for his family, we know that when Yaakov Avinu meets Rachel for the first time, the first thing he says to her, and this is in Source 16, Datraga Rashraga Grossbart, Vayage Yaakov L'Rachel Ki Achi Aviyahu V'Chi Ben Rivkahu. Yaakov Avinu tells Rachel that he is his father's brother, he is the son of Rivka. Father's brother? He's not his father's brother, it's his nephew. Says Rashi, quoting the Medrash, Im L'Ramaot Hu Ba Gamani Achi B'Ramaot V'Im Adam Kasheru Gamani Ben Rivkahu Tok Sheira. If your father is going to deal with me, with Ramos, with trickery, I'm going to be his brother in trickery, I'm going to respond in kind. Explains the Datraga. Is it not fascinating? The Yaakov Avinu, whose mida, whose quality, his emes, his truth, Tikin Emos Yaakov, the end of Pasuk Amicha, is faced so often in his life with what seems to us to be deception, trickery, whether it's tricking his father and dressing up to take the blessing, whether it's going to be tricking love on in the spotted and speckled sheep. How do we understand this? Datraka explains the very important yesod, that the avos are being tested always in the midah, in the quality counter to their strong midah, to see if this is an inborn quality or this is something they do because God commanded them. For example, Avraham Avinu is commanded to take Yitzchak as a sacrifice, a person of chesed, person of love, to kill his own child. Do you have this quality because it's inborn? And if God would tell you to do otherwise, you would still be kind, or you follow God? Yaakov Avinu likewise is tested in this midah. When his mother says, be deceitful, can he listen to his mother who's coming from a place of prophecy? When the angel tells him about the spotted and speckled sheep, is he ready to do this, even though it's counter to his self, his selfhood? And indeed, the Datraga quotes our apostle, Imikeshit Patal, Yaakov Avinu understands that when you're dealing with a loved one, sometimes you have to deal with things that are not your normal mode of operandi, because this is the way people are. And that's the understanding, says the Datraga, the greatness of Yaakov Avinu, is although that he had to act in this way, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Parshat Vayishlach, he comes whole. He doesn't become affected by becoming a deceitful person. He becomes whole in his midos. He understands that there are certain times and places you have to act in a certain way, but that doesn't mean you become that way. And now we understand Pshat and our Pasuk. Yaakov Avinu, who's very afraid of going to Lavan, how is he going to be affected? What's going to happen to him? And Hashem promises him, I will be with you and you'll return home safely. Yaakov Avinu is then able to take the stone, and again the stone represents the binyan, the future, the Evan, the Abben, and he's able to consecrate it. And he calls his place Beit El, which we'll talk about Ritz Hashem in a minute. However, he says, I know I'm about to build the Beit El. I'm about to build the children of Israel. And the stone reflects this. However, I understand that Luz is its name previously. What does Luz represent? As we just saw, Luz represents the fraud. He understands that he may have to. And Hashem tells him to act with love and with deceit. That's how he's going to survive. And he's well aware this is what he's going to have to do. But the statement that Yaakov Avinu is making here is, although I may have to act with love on, right? I might have to act with him in the way he understands, but I know Hashem will be with me, and I'll come back home. And I know it won't affect the ultimate building of Beis Yisrael. I know that Ulam Luz Shemair L'Rishana, at first it was Luz. There will be a time that I'll have to act with Ramos. I might have to act with deceit, just like the Luz bone had to act with deceit to the serpent. I understand that's what I may have to do with Lavan. But I also understand that this is not going to be a long term. It's going to be a short term. And then Luz turns into Beit El. It's going to be a stepping stone, no pun intended, to be able to build the house of God. What is the significance of the house of God? So the third place in our parasha where you see the stones, when he builds that wall between Lavan and him, Hakiyum 18, it's not enough to have a vision. It's not enough just to have the children. How do you maintain this children? Hakiyum hibit badlut muhletet ani lo avor elacha vatalo tavor elai. It's being able to be separate. You don't cross over, and I won't cross over. Am Yisrael Yecholiot, Am Hashem. We can only be the nation of God. Rak kasher minateko kasher kachor gudim hamonim, and Am Yisrael masagan hashleimut. When we detach ourselves from those things that stop us from being the whole nation, from stop us from reaching our shleimus, and indeed, this idea of being able to set up the parameters and the boundaries is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu prefers the name Bayis to this place over Haran Sadeh. Rav Pinkus and Nefesh Shimshon explains that in a symbolic way, all three of them are trying to build a relationship with Hashem. Avraham Avinu maintained, Source 19, that climbing to the top of a mountain and separating himself from the impurity of his surroundings granted him sufficient privacy with Hashem. Yitzchak Avinu disagreed. A mountain is not enough. True, there are not very many people on top of a mountain. Nevertheless, it's an area to all who wish to enter. What we need is a field, because a field is private property. That is why Yitzchak went out to pray in the field. He felt that in order to be alone with Hashem and build a relationship with him, a field is needed. The asterisk in 19 Yaakov Avinu counter, that even the privacy afforded by a field is insufficient to build a proper relationship with Hashem. What we need is total privacy, that of a house. A house is 100% private. No one comes in without knocking, even when the door is unlocked. This is because everyone knows that a house is a private place. My friends, this is what Rav Zev Lev speaks about in his Sefer on his Parsha Vayetze. He says, what Yaakov Avinu is building here is the Jewish home, the Jewish house of prayer, the Jewish house of study. To appreciate in 21 the precise function of the Beis Hashem, we must understand what a house is. A house is basically four walls, a door, perhaps a window. A house, the four walls serve three functions. First, they create an interior area, a private inner domain separated from the public domain. The Jewish home must create an environment of Jewish values and morals, an inner sanctum of spirituality that serves as the foundation of Torah learning and observance. Secondly, the walls form partition that encompass and unite all the individuals who occupy this inner area, which is what Shalom Bayis is about. And third, the inner area is infused with sanctity and purpose. Then the light from the inside can be projected from the windows, and the intense sanctity of the home environment can be exposed to the outside world. Rabosai, this is what the letter Bayis refers to. Bet is from Bina, understanding what to let in and what to keep out. Yud is the letter of holiness. It also represents a unity, all separate integers that unite to one form. the unit of ten, and the yud represents the holiness that pervades the whole when all the individuals unite as servants of Hashem with a common goal. And finally, the tuf is a sign to the outside world of the Jewish home's influence on the entire world, the Beit Elokei Yaakov. But both say on this level, I think the lessons are clear. At times we do have to act with people that are counter to our values, and this is Ritzon Hashem. At times we have to be strong when our personality is that of weakness or that of softness in order to be able to raise children who are going to be strong in their values. The story about a famous Rebbetzin, I don't want to mention her name, who was very, very tough, and the children were very afraid that when she got older, she's going to be impossible. And when she got older, she was the sweetest, nicest old woman imaginable. And they couldn't understand it. They thought, usually, if a person is tough, they get even tougher. And then they understood that her personality was really very soft and sweet. And she took on this toughness in order to be able to raise children and a family that were going to be secure in their avodas Hashem, in their service of God. Sometimes we have to go counter to our nature. And this is what we have to do whenever it's going to be necessary to build a Beit Hashem. We have to understand, as women in particular, that we are the people who hold the keys to this bias. Yaakov Avinu is saying, this is going to be a Beit El, this is going to be a house of God. I'm building the future. The Imaos, the women, are the gatekeepers of this home. What comes into the home and what leaves the home. Whether it's in what we hear, what we see, what we experience, we have the ability to create the walls and barriers and say, this will not pass by my front door. This will not enter into my home. It is not appropriate for Jewish home. Just like we don't invite people into our home who have infectious diseases to affect our entire house, so too we know we don't invite into our homes things that may have that same effect on a spiritual level as well. This is our role, to make sure that we build a bias with the imagery of those stones. Certain things just do not cross over the threshold of our home. If we want to build a Beit El, we want to build a house of God, we want to build a place where the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, resides. And as Rav Pinkus has noted a number of times, just imagine your children are the Sifrei Torah. They have an Aron Kodesh. It's like you have an Aron Kodesh, the Holy Ark in your home. Whatever you would feel comfortable saying, doing, listening to in front of the Aron Kodesh, use that as your barometer of what's appropriate in your home. That, my friends, is level number one. Yaakov Avinu understood that he may have to use the loose bone, may have to use that fraud, he may have to use that corruption in dealing with Lava, but it will not be forever. He will remain intact. He'll be able to build the Beit Hashem. The second message of this parsha is to understand the Luz and the concept of Luz on a much deeper level. We know the city of Luz is mentioned in Sefer Shoftim. And the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, the first parak, source 23, the Navi tells us the house of Yosef went up as well to Beit El, and Hashem was with them. The house of Yosef spied out Beit El. The name of the city in earlier times had been Luz. The lookout saw a man leaving the city, and they said to him, show us the approach to the city. We shall deal kindly with you. He showed them the approach to the city. They struck down the city by the edge of the sword, but they released the man and his entire family. The man went to the land of Chittites. He built a city and called it Luz. That is his name until this day. And Rashi explains, Ad Hayom, until this day, is about that Luz was not destroyed by Sanherib, by Nebuchadnezzar. The Malach HaMavet, the angel of death, is not allowed in. Rather, the Hashem inspires the old people to have enough with life. They leave the city, and then they are taken away. And we know, remember from grade school, that this city, they needed to be shown how to get into this city because it was blocked from anyone entering. In fact, how did they get in? The Medrash says that a luz literally means an almond tree. that there was an almond tree that had an opening in the trunk of the tree, and from that opening he went into a cave, and from that cave he went into the city. It's a city, and that's a symbolism of Seals of the Theme of Eisenberger speaks about in 24 and 25. The city is just connected with death. That's why this man doesn't even tell them how to get into the city. He points, because speech is something that is in the external world. The whole nature of the city is that of the internal world. Now here comes the key for us today, my friends. We know, and this is source 26, from the source of the VM, the following, that there's a concept called Ashan, which is that everything exists in this world. It will exist in three dimensions: Olam, in place; Shana, in time; and Nefesh, in person. Like you have the Kedusha of Shabbos, Kedusha of Kodesh Kedashim, Kedusha of the Kohen Gadol. You have all three, or Yom Kippur, Kodesh Kedashim, Kohen Gadol. You have all three serving in all these dimensions. If you have a city called Luz, then you need to have Luz in time, and you need to have Luz in person as well. Note, Rav Pinchas Mikoritz in 27, that we have another place of Luz in place, and that is the Kotel Maravi, the Western Wall. We'll talk more about this in a minute. We have Luz in time, that we'll talk about also in a minute. In a few minutes, we'll get through everything. And that's every day in Malav Malkam. And Luz in person is us, who has the Luz bone, and Eliyahu Navi, who never dies. Now let's explain. On a certain degree, we have Luz every day. It's the fact that we wake up. The fact that we wake up every morning and we say Moda'ani, Rabbi Bonatecha, great is our faith in God, that He revives us. Sleep is 1/60th of death. We wash our hands when we wake up. And in fact, when we say the bracha of Tchias HaMeitim, we say the end of 28a, V'ne'man atah l'chayot meitim, you are trustworthy to revive the dead. The same idea as Rabbi Munatecha, the same language. We know that Hashem is trustworthy. We know that although we've, so to speak, have, you know, left our soul, right? Our soul comes back to us. Shechazar to be nishmati. So too in the future, God will return our soul. And that's the concept of every day. We have a taste of this chiyat making. More specifically, Motzei Shabbos, this loose bone, is where we really encounter this idea of this life force of Luz. We know in 29, Masilas HaNeviim continues, that our job is to bring from the Tosamshich Tosefek Tusha Shabbos L'chol Yemei HaShavua Ad Shabbat HaAcher. Our job is to take from the Kedusha of this Shabbos and invest it in the next week. And one who does this is going to be protected for the entire week. This is similar to the Isru Chag, the day after Yantif, is a mini holiday where we have special food to connect us from the holiday into the week itself. The way the Chasam Sofer explains this so beautifully in 32nd paragraph, he says, Tam Sudas Motzei Shabbos Nera, the reason for this meal, Mishum Dimi Birka Shabbos Shitbara Kol Shavua. We want to take the blessing of Shabbos on the whole week. Ve'in Abracha Chalal Al Tarekana, but blessing doesn't exist on an empty place, as we've spoken about previously. Like when we bench, we always leave some food on the table, because the bracha of benching has to be put on something. Likewise, l'chein yisader shulchanav motzei Shabbos, you should set your table motzei Shabbos. And in fact, they say that if you have helpers, you should do it yourself because it's such a special inyan. Sheh makom shetachul bracha alav, that the blessing should rest on it. V'yeh mokasher yom haShabbos b'chol shavu b'chol masei yadav, to connect in everything he does the kedusha, the holiness of Shabbos. And that's why it's called Melava Malka, as we have in our, this week's parasha, Levi hapan yilave ishi elai. You know what Levi means? To accompany. The Melava Malka is that the Malka, the Shechina, the Kedusha of Shabbos, will accompany us the whole week. Now I understand the Kedusha of Shabbos is referred to as Mechinas Chaim, as an aspect of life. The asterisks in 30, as we say, Toameh Chaim Zachu, those who tasted are tasting life. And just like the 6 weeks are referred to like death, so the Kedush of Shabbos to enter into the week through Malava Malka is exactly what the Luz is about. The Luz takes that which is life, that which is immutable, and brings it into a person who dies and revives him. So too, the Sutta of Mlava Malka is losing time, that we're able to take this physical meal and through this infuse the entire week with Kedusha, with holiness. And indeed, my friends, one can look at the entire section of Yaakov Avinu leaving Be'er Sheva to go to Haran as a remez, as a hint to the whole Inyan that we're speaking about. As the Lekach V'Libuv notes in the bracket, that Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Sheva, literally, Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva, the well of seven, he leaves Shabbos. Vayela Harana, he enters into the Harono Shalolam, he enters into the anger of the world, particularly Motzei Shabbos, when our Neshama Yaseira leaves. So we know that the point of death is the highest point of impurity. When our Neshama, our extra soul, leaves, that's the time where the greatest impurity can come in. The Harono Shalolam, we have to immediately catch it and fill it with Kedusha, with holiness. And indeed, as the Nesivos Shalom points out in 31, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him an image, and the image is a sulam mutzav artza. A sulam is literally a ladder. Sulam is a notrikon of suda levaya malka. Samech, the suda, the meal, lamed, levaya, of escorting the mem, the malka, the queen. And just like there are angels that come up and down, shalom aleichem, so too Motzei Shabbos, the angels of Shabbos leave, and the angels of the weekdays come back in this meal of Mlava Malka. This meal of Mlava Malka, my friend, is something that sometimes we just, you know, oh, who can eat another meal? Oh my, you expect me to sit down? If we would understand its power, if we would understand that we're infusing in the weak life, if we understand that we're tapping in to the luz, we're tapping into that bracha, and how much bracha, how much blessing it has to counter the curse of Adam and Chava. We understand how much is found in this meal. We understand that we're escorting the angels up and angels back, all in the yarding bow, that this is a time to connect the physical and the spiritual. We would treat this meal with a tremendous amount more respect. We would make it part of our family as something that we understand that this is what we do. We sit down, we sing songs of Eliyahu HaNavi, we sing songs that tell stories, right, that tell stories about Shem Tov HaKadosh, of great tzaddikim. This is a time of tremendous geula, a time of tremendous redemption. If we've seen the laws in place in person, so in time in person, so now we see laws in place as well, 34. Al-Kain Amru Chazal, back to Masilus HaNavim, the Medrash tells us that Hashem's Shechina, Hashem's divine presence, has never left the Kotel Maravi, the Western Wall. And now we understand it. The Katua Mekubolim, Shekimo Etzem Luz Utchia Tameitim, just like this bone of Luz is the place of the resurrection, Kach Nishar Koach. There is a life force in the Kotel. Asher Mimenu, from this place, there will be the ability, the yate, the foundation to build the future Beis HaMikdash. And now I understand why on Motzei Shabbos we sing about Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi represents Luz in person as well. He never dies. He represents the one who's going to be the harbinger of Mashiach. We speak about the Luz in time, Motzei Shabbos, the Luz in person, Eliyahu HaNavi, to be able to rebuild the Luz in place, which is the Beis HaMikdash, and it all comes together. Now I can appreciate as well why Yaakov Avinu calls this place of Beit Elokim a house of God, and that he represents, as far as speak about, that Avraham Avinu Zahar represents the first base of Mikdash. The Malchum Tov HaKadosh mentions this, the Alshach HaKadosh, Yitzchak, Sion, Sadeh, Techaresh represents the second base of Mikdash. Yaakov Avinu is the third base of Mikdash. Yaakov Avinu himself, 36, never died. He himself also represents this Luz. So now I can appreciate in 38, that the Sfarim say that when Yaakov Avinu put this stone down, what he's doing is setting the foundation for the Evan Ashtia, the stone which the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built on. And Yaakov Avinu calls it a bayit, which is a reference to the third Beis HaMikdash that will go up to Beit Elokei Yaakov. And he's saying very clearly, albeit that this is going to be a place of the third base of Mikdash after the first two, which have been completely destroyed, don't think that you can't build the third base of Mikdash here. Why is that so? Because the name of this place is Luz. The character of this place is Luz. Luz is that place that is never destroyed, that you can never give up hope. So in this very place of Luz, which represents eternity, long-lasting Luz, this is the place that Beit Elokei Yaakov, Beit El, that this is going to be where the third base of English is going to be built. Yaakov Avinu represents Golos. Yaakov Avinu in our section here, Davins. Vayivka Bamako, Mitavins Mariv. Mariv represents when we're in Golos. Yaakov Avinu represents the Av of Golos when things are difficult. Yaakov Avinu is telling us that even in Golos, even when everything looks destroyed, there's going to be Beit El here. There's going to be a third base of Mikdash. Because the essence of Jews and the essence of Judaism is Luz. Is the idea that things aren't destroyed. My friends, this second level is so fundamental for our lives. We're both like, please listen carefully. What we see here is that the basis of Yiddishkeit is mamish this pasuk. To build a Beit El, a house of God, both on the macro and micro level, is to understand it's built on Luz. And Luz means that it's never destroyed. Even death is not a finality. Even death is going to be revived. A Jew can never despair. A Jew can never feel like it's over. You want to know why we have so many concepts of Luz, that the Malach HaMavet isn't able to enter into the city, that Eliyahu Novi never dies, that the Kotel Maravi never is destroyed and the Kedusha remains, that we have this Luz on Shabbos to bring the Kedusha of Shabbos into the week? It's teaching us over and over again, there's hope. There's always that kernel. There's always that little bit that can be built. One should never, ever enter into a state of total yeyush, of total despair. Rabosai, this as women is our job more than any other job. Our job as women is the job of emunah. If men are MS, women are emunah. We hold that faith. We are the ones who have belief in the redemption. You know why? Because we understand the secret of the Luz. We understand the secret that nothing ever, ever is a finale, is finished. We can always rebuild. We can always have hope. Nothing, even death itself, is never a finale. You know, Rabbi Krohn came out with a new book, I believe, Illuminations of the Maggid, which are its latest and greatest insights and stories. You know, the very beautiful Maisa, the name's being changed, of a Cheder Borough Park, where Rebbe gives a big bechina, big test, Erev Pesach, before the vacation, on everything they learned from Chanukah through Pesach. And there was one boy there, Yankee, and this boy was not one of the strongest in the class, and he's sitting and taking this test very seriously. And every few minutes, the Rebbe notices, he takes out a piece of paper from his pocket, looks at it, and writes down some answers, and puts it back. And then, again, looks at it, writes down some answers, puts it back. And the Rebbe says, oh my gosh, this kid is cheating right in front of me. And there's no feeling of shame, like, you know, come on, let's be a little bit creative. You know, I remember once, I'm going back here 20-something years, okay, where a girl who's always had a sweatshirt over her head took the whole test like this. And somebody later told me that she had a Walkman in her ears, and she had a tape recorder in her pocket, and she was listening to all the material. Okay, that's a little bit more creative than just what taking out a paper. Anyway, getting back to the story. So the Rebbe calls over this Yankee after the test, sits him down, and says, Yankee, how was the test? Amazing, Rebbe. I think I did very well. And the Rebbe starts asking questions orally, and he answers them beautifully. And he says, Rebbe, you can check my test. I really studied hard. I studied with my father, the Gemara. And the Rebbe checks his test, and he, sure enough, gets 100. So the boy says, is any problem, Rebbe? So the rabbi says, well, Yankee, I was just a little bit curious about this piece of paper. And the boy's eyes start to, you know, tear. Rebbe, you think that's cheating? I wasn't cheating. The rabbi said, I just want to understand, you know, this paper's coming in and out. I just want... So the boy pulls out the paper and says, Rebbe, you could take a look at this paper for yourself, see what it is. And the rabbi sees it's his own handwriting on the paper. What was it? It was what the Rebbe had written to this boy's father to show the boy a back-to-school night with parent-teacher conferences. And the Rebbe wrote that Yankee's a wonderful boy and he has a tremendous amount of potential and he's going to make a tremendous Talmid Chacham one day. And the boy said, you know, Rebbe, every time I look at this, I feel you believe in me. And if you believe in me, then I believe in me. So when I had a difficult question on the test and I said, I can't answer this question, I'd pull out this paper and I would say, wow, the Rebbe believes in me. I know I can do it. And sure enough, I was able to do it. Rabosai, that's the luz that we all need to infuse in people's lives. How many chicken soup stories do we know of people who, when classmates would write good things about them, it was found in their wallet 30, 40 years later, right? Because we all need to be built up. We all need to say that when times are difficult and things are hard and we feel like we're pulverized and beaten to the ground, there's a luz in us. There's specialness in us. There's greatness in us. That's what this pasuk is telling us. To build the Beit El, to build the third base, to make this again on the macro and the micro level, to be able to build ourselves, you need to have a luz. And you know what luz is about? Something that can never be destroyed. Luz is about belief. Luz is about faith. Luz is about the understanding that the Malach HaMavet can't touch it. It's immutable. It's a place. It is holiness. It's that spark of us that we're going to be rebuilt. It's a part of us that understands that no matter what happens in life, we're still us. We still have that kernel and that goodness, and that can never be taken away from us, and even death can never take it away from us. Nothing is a final and finale. So my friends, just one more insight. First level, sometimes we have to deal with laws. We have to deal with challenges in life in a way that's counter to our personalities if this is what is dictated at this moment. But we can never forget that it can't overwhelm and overtake our personalities by Yaakov Shalem. That laws was its name, deceptiveness. Ultimately, it's a Beit El, and that's the ability to know how to make boundaries and to be able to have the strength to say, our family does not do this. I know every single family has. We don't. We don't see. We don't go. We don't do. There has to be that level of boundary. And every family is going to be different. And that's the Beis El Yaakov. That's the privacy of Kadosh Baruch Hu needs and wants from us. The second level is the idea that the luz represents in time, place, and person, the Kotel Maravi, Malava Malka, the importance of the Suda Malava Malka, the Suda Levaya Malka, to be able to have the bracha on the entire week to Mamash, sit down, sing about Eliyahu Navi, about rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, because this is the time to connect all three together. This is a message for us at the beginning of every week. No matter what we're going to encounter this week, we have the luz to infuse into the week. We have the chayus, we have the life force, and that is something, particularly as mothers, we have to bring in to our family, that modus operandi. Finally, my friends, beautiful idea. They're both Rabban Tzion Zaks, Menachem Tzion, and Rav Moshe, Rav Shain, Rav Moshe Scheinerman bring. As he says, when we read a pasuk like this about laws, we may say to ourselves, you know what? Wow, wouldn't it be amazing to live in laws? Like to live for the rest of our life until, you know, we just get tired of life and leave. Like, how much money would you pay to live in a city like that? All of us dream of eternity, right? Denial of Death was a best-selling secular book because it's hard for us to even face the idea of death. Imagine living forever. So he says, by Yaakov, Ichriz 44 in the asterisk, Vayikra Shem Makomahu, Asher Yatsiach at Shmo, Shekol Elu, Harigaim Asher Makrivam Lutorah, Haim Sharim Chaim Vikaimim Lolam. You want to know how you live forever? Not living in the city of Luz. I have a little secret to tell you. You can never run away from the Malach HaMavet. The Malach HaMavet is going to find you. He's going to run after you. God's going to inspire you to leave. It's going to happen. But you want to live forever, I have a little secret to tell you. Ulam luz shema yilu rishonah. You may think it's luz, it's not it. What it is it's Beit El. It's living a life of dalet amos shel halacha. It's living a life of being able to build a house of Torah mitzvos. Ein dover ba'olam eskwigli 44, shenatriyach et ha'adam, that will create eternity. Hamakoma Nitriya Yechidi, the only eternal place who Beit El, Zoe Abes Yaakov, Likshur Ksharim Taras Hashem, to connect ourselves to Torah of Hashem. Asherak Aleh Huftecha, and about it, it is promised that it was Charus al Luchos, engraved on the Luchos. Chazal say, Al Tikri Charus al Chayrus b'malach ha-mavet. That's free for the Malach ha-mavet. You want to live a Chaye Netzach, this is how you do it. However, as the Mishpatot Zahav points out in 41, Ulam Luz Shema Yer L'Rishona. Luz, the name, the city Luz, gives us a hint on how to build this Beit El, this house of God, how to build this place of divine presence. Mishpatot Zahav in Shoftim points out in 41 that the Luz, the almond tree, gives us two insights on how to build this life of Nitzrius. One, the Luz branch is something that flourishes. It has a lot of, it's very fresh and it's very beautiful. He says that's one insight, that our approach to Torah mitzvot have to be as if it's new every day, vibrant every day. When you feel this newness and vibrancy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then v'atem advekim b'Hashem Elokechem chayim kulchem hayom, then you'll live. That's chayus, that's life, feeling the sense of dveikus. And the second thing about an almond is an almond is completely smooth. You can't open it. You got to crack it open, right? A nutcracker. Remember those? Otherwise, it's not like an apple or an orange that you can, you know, open up with your hands, get the inside. And that represents our mouth. That in order to be able to live a life of nitzchius, watch what you say. As the Chafetz Chaim says, "Mi'aisha Chafetz Chaim, O of Yamin Lirotov, who is the person who loves life to enjoy long days?" Careful how you speak. When we're guarding our mouth from speaking negative, when we don't allow the Yetzer Hara into our area of our mouth, that too is the protection of being able to live forever. So on the third level, what our pasuk is a directive for each and every one of us. Yaakov Avinu was telling us, the Bechir HaAvos, he's telling us, you want to know how each and every one of us can build a house of God? He is consecrating the stone as an evet for a house of God. How do we consecrate our own homes, our own avanim, our own avbens? I will tell you, it's living a how. It's living a life of Torah. It's living a life of dalat amos halacha, of the four cubits of keeping Jewish law. It's bringing God into our lives, Hashem into our lives at all times. Two aspects that enable us to accomplish this is v'ulam luz shema yir l'rishona. Look at the almond. See how vibrant and fresh it is and how it flourishes? That's how your attitude toward Torah mitzvah should be. See how smooth it is on all sides. That's how closed your mouth should be. Like that person didn't even open his mouth to say how you enter into the city. He just pointed how careful we have to be with the aspect of our speech. And therefore, my friends, what we're trying to see as lessons for our lives, one, careful what we bring in. We are the gatekeepers to our homes, and we have to realize that our values have to be clear and standard set. Two, we have to be the ones that are going to infuse that hope, that life, into situations that might be of despondency, that nothing is ever final. And that's the message of the long-lasting laws. And finally, you want to live a long-lasting life? It's not by hiding in a city called Luz. It's by living a life of Torah mitzvot. When you live a life of Torah mitzvot, that's how you create everlasting life. And my bracha to all of us, my friends, is that we should be successful in the gatekeeping, we should be successful in bringing and instilling hope in our families, and we should be successful in living a life and infusing others in a life and building a life and homes filled with Torah and mitzvot and creating that long-lasting Luz, the long-lasting life in all of our lives.